Welcome to today's webinar on ways to enhance your hybrid and virtual team's motivation. Let us begin. Engagement. What is it? And obviously, for people to be motivated, they need to be engaged. So there are different levels of engagement. The first level is, well, engaged. The person is feeling with passion and profound connection with the organization. When someone is fully engaged, what you'll find is they're the ones thinking about it on the weekend. On a Friday afternoon, they left thinking of wanting to come up with the answer to a difficult algorithm, a problem, how to deal with a customer, how to make a presentation. And they'll be thinking about that over the weekend or evenings. From there, you may have people who are not engaged. Not engaged, you know, they're sort of sleepwalking a little bit. They're getting the work done. But, you know, 5:01, they walk out the door, or maybe they're doing a little bit of quiet quitting on you. In fact, in addition to quiet quitting, I've heard another one, which is minimum Mondays, which is basically do as little as Monday on as possible, even if that means when you're working on Friday, writing a few of the emails that you want to send on Monday, and just periodically logging in and sort of hitting send a couple of times along the way. And then I think it was on the, was it Jimmy Fallon or one of those guys was talking about it. He says, well, you know, first we have quiet quitting, then we have minimum Mondays, and if they keep that up, soon they're going to learn about fired Fridays. But anyway, this is not engaged. You know, they're doing the work, they're doing okay, but you know, they're not going to go the extra the extra mile for you if needed. And then there's disengaged. This is actually rather dangerous to your departments. These people are unhappy, but to the point that they're acting it out. You're seeing it in their attitude and so on. And it just doesn't feel good. You know, they may be bringing down other employees. They're certainly doing quiet quitting. I know a couple of people that have had people like this on their teams and found out they were doing two jobs at once. They were working virtually not only for them, but also for somebody else. Double dipping, so to speak. Obviously, that didn't go well. And as soon as that was learned, they had, you know, lost their jobs, obviously. Next is, how do you enhance engagement? Now that I've sort of put the fear of you, you know, in sort of number two and certainly number three above. Well, first, strong and trusted relationship with their manager. If they really like you as the manager or whoever that manager is, they won't want to disappoint them. You know, they'll enjoy working with them. Think of the times during your career where you've liked the manager that you were working for. Excuse me, ongoing communication, including one by one, one-on-ones. This helps keep them engaged. A feeling of belonging. You know, if they feel like they're part of the team, if they're working virtual, particularly, even if they're in the office, interestingly, if they don't feel like, you know, they're sort of part of the gang, then it's really easy to just want to, you know, back off and just, you know, move it from engaged to unengaged or disengaged. Next is understanding the value of their contribution. In other words, you know, when you ask them to perform a task, what's the value of that task? I'll give you an example of this is that, well, we're a virtual firm ourselves, the IT Management Leadership Institute. And just happened just the other day, one of the people on our team did something really good. I asked them to perform a task. They did a great job on it. It actually really helped us with a business issue we were having. So what I did was afterwards, I went back to her, the person who did the work, and I said, hey, remember you did that analysis for us? Oh, yes. So that was huge when we were figuring out how to roll out the marketing program we were working on and actually did X, Y, and Z because of your good work. Just a little bit of that didn't cost me any money. Didn't cost me any time because we were on a phone, on a Zoom session anyway. But just those little things, I mean, don't glad hand people. Say it because it's true and because you mean it. But if you're thinking it, you should say it. Next is just belief in the organization's mission. We'll be talking about, actually, I'll have a whole slide on that one a little bit later. But if people believe that what your organization does is really good for the world, good for the environment, good for somebody, is that they will be more likely to be motivated to enhance it. And you, as their manager, should be trying to, you know, connect the dots, as they say, between, you know, like, well, what they did and why it's good. They're internal in IT, which I'm assuming many of you are, given, well, who we are. But anyway, is that you're helping an internal client, well, an internal customer. Well, if that internal customer's in customer service and it saved a big account, then in fact, that's good to feed back because you help the person who saved the account. There's true value in that. And then in the last part of this, I'll just bring it back up here, is just give people things they enjoy. I mean, they can't enjoy every, you can't give, they can't enjoy everything they do. You know, obviously we all have to, as they say, take one for the team. But anything you can do that they enjoy, that brings them toward professional mastery in whatever their specific career discipline is, or just forwards their career goals. You know, that's where the true magic happens. What I mean by that is when the corporate goals match the department goals, match the department manager's goals match the individual contributor's goals, then you're off and running. It's a wonderful place to be. Now, continuing on this idea of motivational concepts, this gentleman Hertzberg came up actually in the 1950s, I believe, on what he calls the two-factor theory. Certain factors in the workplace. Give me one moment here, just technical issue. There we go, fixed. Certain factors in the workplace can cause job satisfaction or dissatisfaction. What they are, oops, ah, there we go. First one is motivators. And I'll just show you both, so because we're going to be comparing and contrasting the two. Motivators are those things when you think about motivation, you know, challenge, recognition, opportunity, you know, all of that really good stuff that everybody says about motivation. But there are also what they call motivational hygiene factors. What these are, you know, it's like salary, job security, working conditions, et cetera. The difference between them is that hygiene factors is you can give people challenging work and wonderful things to work on. But you know what? If their salary is totally subpar, if they're not sure if they're going to lose their jobs and the work conditions are horrible, then no matter what kind of challenges, great recognition you give them, they're probably going to hate it there. So these two factors are looked at very different. One can bring you down, and the other one can bring you up. But what's really interesting is his research showed the job satisfaction and job dissatisfaction factors, namely the motivators and the hygiene factors, they're independent to each other. So as a result, this means that both factors must be addressed because issues with either one can cause job satisfaction within your team that, on the one hand, can reduce engagement, as we saw in the previous slide. But also, you know, employees at the end of the day will vote with their feet. If they hate it there, if they're not motivated, if they're paid, excuse me, you know, extremely low. I'm not saying just a little below, I'm saying extremely below. If the work conditions are awful, you know, I worked at a firm once, and on really hot days, it was an old mill building, and on really, really hot days, they used during the Civil War, they used to make wool blankets there. So anyway, on really, really hot days, lanolin that was sort of stuck within the wood would drip down onto your desk, onto your head. It was gross. All right. But anyway, so what did they do to enhance that? They actually, I think, bought 8 million gallons or something like that of polyurethane and just basically sealed everything up. But those were things that people thought were gross and didn't want to work there. Even though the work was challenging, quite frankly, no one wanted to do it in a hot day sitting at their desk. But anyway, so what this means is that both factors must be addressed because issues in either one can cause you problems as their manager in regard to their motivation. The next is expectant theory of motivation. What this is this theory, it's a theory that explains how people choose actions they believe will lead to the best outcome. Now, this is also actually called, and you'll see why, it's known as the valence instrumentality expectation theory. The reason is because there's three things in it. And guess what they are? Yes, this first one, expectancy. What this one is this is how likely their efforts will help them achieve their goals, whatever their goals happen to be. Now, if you're good at influencing them and your goals are their goals, that's ideal. But whatever goals they have, that's it, you know, like how much will their work help them meet their goals? For example, if someone is in sales and they have a quota, if they make three more calls per day, you know, will that help them, you know, get their goal? If so, then that feels good. Next one, is their belief that increasing work ethic will lead to improved performance. That is, quite frankly, how hard they should work. So the first one is it attainable? The second one is how hard do they have to work to get there? And then the third one is the belief that the reward will be worth the extra work. You know, if it's like, oh, I got to do all this extra stuff just for this little extra money or this little extra whatever, you know, they may say, yeah, you know, I can get it and I could do it if I work really hard, but I'm not sure I want to. These are really important things for you to consider. The reason is this assumption assumes that if these three factors will be combined to create an overall motivational force for that person to meet their goal, and that the person will pursue this goal at the highest motivational force that they can provide. So you want to drive their motivation? Just look at these three things and see if it helps, if they're in alignment with that person personally. Next one. Great book. It's called Drive. Obviously, it's by Daniel Pink. And what this says is true motivation arises when individuals connect with their work to a higher purpose and receive and perceive their contributions to be meaningful. Tying to a bullet point, actually, you previously saw, and quite frankly, you will see again. But the three things that they talk about here are autonomy. In other words, the ability to do things, you know, self-directed. The way that I like to look at this is look at it as the reverse of being micromanaged. Now, sometimes people need training and they have to be micromanaged, but look at this as having the autonomy to get things done. The second one is mastery, the feeling of getting better with things that matter by getting feedback. You know, mastery can be on things. That's why we do things like play guitar on the weekend. You know, should you do so, or you have some other skill, you're never going to make money at it, but you want to learn how to draw better, or you like to do painting, or whatever it is. But because you do it just because you want to be able to improve. That's an inherent thing within humans, according to Mr. Pink, that it will that people want to have this and want to be able to master in things and that they think is important. And the third of which is purpose. Again, this is a common theme that you're seeing, is that knowing what they're doing, knowing the sort of the why behind the what, can give them great value in regard to motivating them. If you can tell them that, give them that, understand why what they're doing, their contribution is so important. So from here now, let's move to creating a motivational environment. You know, all those things are fine, but you know, like we said, even just going back, you know, to the hygiene factors that we spoke of. Awful environment, bad management, no heat in the building, no air conditioning in the building. You know, they think they're going to lose their job. All of those things and everything else is part of the environment. But now let's look at it from some other perspectives. The first of which is anyone familiar with Tuckman's stages of group development? You may know them, as it says here, as forming, storming, norming, and performing. I'll take 1 minute to explain what this is. I'm going to give you a fake homework assignment I'm not going to collect, and that is Google Tuckman stages of group development, and you'll see probably 8 million Google links on this that you can go and learn a little bit about it. But bottom line is when a group comes together, first forming, hi, it's very nice to meet you, and so on. Just everyone's on their best behavior. Then storming. This is where everyone's figuring out their role. What do you mean you're the main business analyst? I'm the lead business analyst, blah, blah, blah. But after a while, everyone sort of knows what their roles is. They know enough about each other. They can anticipate each other a little bit. And then that moves to the norms. What are the norms for the group? Where you'll see this is very much in sports teams. The two areas that I like to think of it from is if anyone's a football fan, the offensive line. When you have an offensive line, you know, those are the people protecting the quarterback and the running back, so to speak. But anyway, when they're together for a long time, and obviously they have to be great athletes and such, but they can sort of anticipate that when one moves a little to the left, the other one should move a little bit to the left. You know, that kind of stuff. They anticipate things, they work with each other. With a basketball team, you'll see it. You know, the five people out in the basketball court. You know, if someone goes this way, they'll inherently know that someone's going that way, or who's the person who takes the shot, or passes the ball, or sets up the play. All of that becomes sort of just standard norms of how things are done. In teams, it's who works on what pieces, who does the presentation, who does the documentation, et cetera. When that happens, it drives performance. But also, in addition to sort of the processing part of it, also good, norms related to, well, in our case, motivation. coming in on time, working as a team, collaborating rather than being cutthroat. All of those are part of the team's environment. So what I will say to you here is that if you're now understanding sort of what this is, once team norms are in place, they're really difficult to change. So as a result of that, is from a motivational perspective, where possible, try to get the motivational factors and sort of everything you want to have happen really early during the forming and storming levels. Because once you reach the norming stage, that's sort of how everybody's going to be doing things. And now you're changing culture and it just gets really more difficult. Now you're probably sitting there going, hey, wait a minute. All right, all that's fine and good, but my team's been together for 3, 4 years. What do we do? Well, that little dotted arrow that goes back to forming, every time a major player comes and goes within your team, it could be a new president of the company and the policies of the organization are changing. You could be a new manager coming into an existing team. Maybe one of the key members of your team have left, or maybe your team's gone from 5 people, company's doing well, to 7 people. So a couple more people were hired. Every time there's a change to that group of people, the norming, it will go, faster up those 4 steps. But those are great times because it's forming. What's this new person going to do? What are the rules of the new manager? Hey, we were just bought out by a bigger company. What's going to be different? Every time that comes down to norming, it gives you increased opportunity to be able to create a motivational environment. Now, that said, is that how do you get people to want to do that? If that's the timing, now let's look at the how, that being the when. All right, this is Pygmalion effect. Now, someone might be looking at that, probably a number of people. If you are, feel free to say, and saying, hey, wait a minute, Pygmalion effect? It's been a long week, forgive me. What could that be? Well, gee, that sounds a lot like My Fair Lady, the play in the movie. Yes, it's the same thing. It's based on this, or this is based on that. I think this is based on that. But the idea is when we expect certain behaviors of others, we are likely to act in ways that makes the expected behavior more likely to occur. In other words, I'm going to go through some steps here. But if you treat your team, like they are going to be succeed, like they are going to succeed, like everyone is motivated. If you treat them in that very positive way through enforcement and so on, they're more likely to be that way because you're putting these beliefs in them because they're your beliefs as the leader. So first, set an expectation of excellence within the team. In other words, of course we're going to do excellence. Then number two, what are you really doing here with the success factors? You're defining that success. The third one, personally emulate these factors, thus leading by example. For those of you who've taken many webinars from me, and as you know, I do these on a monthly basis, is that one of my favorite, or actually my very favorite Steve Jobs quote is leaders lead by example, whether they want to or not. Another one of these, from a parental perspective, is if you've ever, oh, wow, I should stand right here. It looks like I got a little hat on. What's that? I'm just sort of right in the middle of the frame here. I look rather saint-like. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Just having fun. But anyway, is you may have also heard the expression with parents, you never want to be put in the position of don't do what I do what I tell you. That's this number three here. It's leading by example in your team. You want your team to be motivated? You act motivated. The next one, speak and treat your team in a way that shows your beliefs in their ability to provide high standards. A lot of coaches and sports teams do the same type thing. And next is reinforce desired behavior through your dialogue and your actions. In other words, someone does something that's really in line with what you want to do, tell them on a Friday at 3 o'clock, say, hey, you know what? It's so important that everybody worked so well this week. We're winding down. We got things going. You worked a couple extra hours during the week. Why don't you take a couple of hours off end of the day here on Friday? Now, if you do that, make sure you're not getting in trouble with your boss or your HR department. But whatever it is, maybe what you do is employee of the month, that kind of thing. But something to recognize them through either just your dialogue or through actions. Next is because we're talking about techies here also. But you know what? Techies are people too. So as a result, the things that motivate techies motivate everybody. So what's the motivate everybody list, that standard cast of characters? Interesting and challenging work to do. Career growth opportunities in the areas where people are interested in doing so. Recognition and appreciation. And just a simple thank you when you're on the phone with them, and so on. Clear goals and expectations. Flexible work arrangements. Now, this one you're going to be seeing again from another perspective. A positive work environment, work-life balance, financial incentives and rewards. Sometimes, well, it is about the money. Just clear communication on what should be done, leading by example. These are things that are important to everyone. And quite frankly, is that you should really be looking at these. We're going to come back to the work to the work-life balance one in a few moments. But if you're not providing these, then chances are, regardless whether IT or non-IT staff, there's going to be some chinks in your armor in regard to their job satisfaction, certainly, but also their motivation. Next, for those who are technically inclined. Assess access to leading edge technologies and tools. Now here is that you want to totally demotivate your staff. Let's say that they're I don't know, Oracle developers, DBAs and PL SQL developers. Be three, four, five versions behind on Oracle. See how long your best people last. You always want to be, to the extent you can, budget-wise and security-wise and so on the latest versions of vendor software. The reason being is it gives your team a chance to be marketable. Be an early adopter of technologies also going along with them. For example, if any of your group is saying to you, "Oh, wow, we really should go to the cloud. That's been around for like 10 years. We really shouldn't have everything on-prem. Can we at least look into it?" Anyone who says that to you, certainly they're looking to be in more advanced technologies, but also they're getting bored in what they know. They feel that their marketability is being diminished, which can dramatically hurt their career. And that person may be at fear of loss, let alone loss of motivation. They may be voting with their feet, and one day you'll find they're no longer working for you. Staying current on the versions of technology. Collaborative, innovative, and creative work environment where people can work together on just really cool stuff that you're trying to bring forward. And also just the projects that they'll enjoy that will enhance their mastery, back to Daniel Pink that we said before, and just forwarding their professional goals. These are the things that will really help drive techies forward from a motivational perspective. But also at the end of the day, you also, want to make a house a home. You want to make it a nice place for them to be, just somewhere they go, "Yeah, gee, I really love my job, the people I work with, the work that we do, the company I'm at, and so on." So how do you do that? First of all of the things that we've already talked about are of key importance, obviously. The next is quality management. If you're a really bad manager, you don't delegate well, you don't communicate, you just don't do that stuff. If you've ever worked for somebody like that or in that kind of environment where the management is, I'll just say, well, questionable from an expertise and quality perspective, you're probably looking for out. The next is a feeling of belonging. This is particularly true in a virtual world. Someone's sitting out there, they're doing work, they don't really know what other people are doing. You're giving them tasks, they say, "Thank you." You say, "Thank you, here's your next task. Thank you, here's your next task." They don't really know how it's being used, what the next task is. They don't really know you very well because you've just been directly to the point and not given yourself some of yourself to them to develop a relationship between you. If they don't have a feeling of belonging, then they don't care if they work for you or somebody else for another 50 cents a week, or a slightly new version of a piece of software. What the heck? They don't care because they don't feel like they're part of the core team. The next is understanding the value of contribution, which we mentioned before, which, by the way, many of these are connected. If there's quality management, then you're going to be make sure that your team understands the value of contribution. You're going to be communicating with them more, which will do what? Give them a better feeling of belonging. So all of these things are intertwined. Next one is friends at work. Study after study has shown that one of the leading indicators for both job satisfaction and reduced attrition, namely people leaving, is having friends at work. Now, if you have friends at work, what does that also do? It gives you a feeling of belonging. Again, trying to connect all these in that regard. Next is continually enhancing their skills and marketability. You know, we've seen this one from a couple of perspectives. And meeting their sort of in-office hybrid, virtual needs. You know, how often do they have to come into the office? Companies have been, organizations of all types, I shouldn't just say companies, have been struggling with this since COVID ended. You know, do we want to let people work fully virtual? Do we want to have them in the office 2, 3 days a week? A couple of major organizations, one major tech company, I won't say who it is, but they just announced they want everybody back in the office 5 days a week. Now, will they get some attrition? Will some people say, yeah, you know, I didn't want to come in office 5 days a week. You know, all right, bad enough, I got to come in three. Gee, this is a great company. Who will hire me that will do it virtually? Some people will say, great, I love everybody's coming back into the office. You know, just loved that previous work environment. But also, I said that we would revisit work-life balance. What I think is more important than work-life balance is what, because that's, you know, how much do you work? What I would call here is what's more important is what I like to call work-life accommodation. You know, maybe someone's willing to work, you know, 10 hours a day for you, which quite frankly isn't very good work-life balance. However, what they really need is they really need to not start their workday until 9:30 in the morning. Why? Because they want to put their kids in the bus in the morning because their spouse has an earlier shift. So then once they're there, the spouse can take, you know, like the, you know, till 6, 7 o'clock when you get home. But the thing is, you really need to have that extra hour and a half in the morning. That's work-life accommodation, where you're trying to work your schedule, you know, work their schedule into the work that you need done. Another way I've seen this is what, you know, what I've seen is called split shift, where someone will work their 8 hours a day, but what their 8 hours are, they're from 10 to 2, which is 4 hours, and then the rest of the day is from like 8 to 12, or let's say 7 to 11, you know, like the end of the day with early morning and midday split. Now, why might someone do that? They're a single parent. They need to put their kids in the school bus. And then they can work the whole middle of the day when the school, so maybe it's, you know, like maybe it's 9 to 3 or 9 to 2. I probably said a few, an hour or two less. But they work school hours in the middle. The kids come home, they, you know, they play with them, they bring them to activities, they feed them dinner, they put them to bed, and then they work again, say from 7 o'clock at night or 7:30 at night until their work day ends. This may even be ideal, for example, if they're working with people, say in Europe. In Europe, it would be good to work an earlier shift if you're in the US. If you're with Asia, maybe a later shift. So, you know, it could actually help in some work things also. Or maybe, you know, someone can come in at 7 in the morning or 6 in the morning and leave at 3 in time to get their kids off the bus. And that could be great if you're in Boston and there's an office, say, in London, because there'll be more commonality between when that person is here and when they're there during their standard business day. So, but accommodation is awesome because you know what? It's also much harder for somebody to find a job and say, oh yeah, you I'd really like to work, you know, from 10 to 2:30 and then from 7:30 to 10 at night. Can I do that? You know, it's a little harder to find a job like that. So if you can really meet someone's sort of life needs in regard to scheduling and other things, you can really not only enhance their motivation from a hygiene and a creative perspective, but also it makes it much harder for them to leave, which reduces attrition. Now let's just talk about some influence-based motivational techniques. First of which is taking the high road. I love this one. Actually, I love them all, so I shouldn't pick on them. But what this one is that if you find a way to align your interests or the interests of specific people in your team to the greater good, it becomes more difficult for other people to push their personal agenda. So in other words, is that alternatives to, you know, alternatives come across as less worthy. The tactics, the idea behind this is if you can get the organization to really, to people in the organization to really think you're doing a good thing. You're in a municipality, and darn it, you really want to do everything possible to help the citizenship. You're working for a life sciences company, and you're helping solve certain types of cancers or illnesses that are less common, but you know really, really affect the people that they affect, or whatever it is. You know, if you can get people to really buy into it, It not only makes it more difficult for people to say why you shouldn't do it, but makes more pe people more motivated to follow along. So first, what you do is use this one organization terminology. What that is, hey, even though we're in IT, we're not directly helping create those cancer drugs, but you know what? We're really helping the people who are. And they're really literally saving people's lives with the work that they're doing. I mean, that's something you can really hang your hat on. And how do you do it? You tie organizational goals and values to the company's well-being, to the social things that you're trying to tie into it, which ideally are of great importance to the people that you're trying to motivate. Next, never underestimate the value of storytelling. For those of you who have little kids or used to have little kids and now they're grown, or when you were a little kid, did you ever go to your parents or do your kids ever go to you, say a first or second grader, and say, Mommy or Daddy, would you please give me a 5-page PowerPoint on the things I'm going to be doing in first grade? Or do they say, read me a bedtime story? I'm sort of hoping for the second one. But humans, by our nature, like listening to stories. In fact, it adds to your, they're easier to remember and so on. And also, before the written word, is that information and cultural history was passed forward through song and through stories from generation to generation, you know, for literally tens of thousands of years. So here is a carefully crafted story can in, you know, that includes facts, emotion, you know, can influence others to take your positions and to be motivated by what you are trying to do. So how do you do this? Gain an understanding of the other person's values, interests, and needs. You know, define a situation that relates to that forwards your goals, and then craft a story, you know, of how your goals and their values work together to move toward whatever business objective you need to make. So just stories. It could be, gee, you know, I'm going to go back to the health sciences thing. Is, hey, do you remember this other product that we worked on? Or like, maybe it's like, hey, when I was here 5 years ago, we had a similar type project that the organization was doing research on. Now, us, we were providing all of the standards. We did a lot of data analysis for them, and brought in actually big data and did all this these analytics. And it really, really sped the time of the drug our company was developing to market. Now, yes, that made the company a lot of money a lot sooner. But you know what else it did? Is the original project was estimated to take 2 years to come to market from this point in its analysis. We got it there in a year because of the data analytics that we did. During that year, do you know how many lives were saved? 127 people's lives were saved because of this drug coming on this year earlier. In fact, one of them that I spoke to was so and so. You know, her child had this type of thing and blah, 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 and so on. And it's, oh my God, we have to get this to market sooner so that it can help people and save the lives of others it might not be ready for. Next is we're digging directly into influence theory now, with Cohen Bradford. My favorite influence quote is this one by them, and that's two people, Cohen and Bradford, not one person with a hyphenated name. Just giving them both credit. But anyway, influence is possible when you have what others want. So, you know, this is really meant for just general influence. But if you have virtual team members or just team members in office, all of these influence techniques, particularly these, I find really work well to motivate them. The first, so think to yourself, what do they want? You know, are they looking for vision? Excellence or just doing the right thing. We've talked about some of these. You know, vision, if you can provide a goal for them and they like to find something greater than themselves to work on, like maybe the story from the last slide, is that will motivate them. Excellence, that's mastery from Daniel Pink's book. They just want to get better at it. Or moral correctness, Don, we should do this because it's the right thing. It's good for the citizenship, our customers, our clients, you know, our members, if it's an association, whatever it might be. If they're juiced on that, then it's easier to motivate them to work on tasks that move toward that end if you can make the connection. The next is task-related currencies. You know what? Sometimes you have to help them. You have to put them in a training class. You have to provide them the time to work on it. You have to let them team up with another person to learn the skills through cross training. You have to provide value to them for them to be able to help you. The classic way I like to say that is is you're helping them help you. The third of which is position-related currencies. What these are recognition, visibility, and reputation. In other words, if you're in a team meeting and you say, oh, I'll pick on someone on here, David. I'll say, David, where are you out there? Oh, David, yeah, everybody know David over there? He's the one who came up with the algorithm that allowed us to implement that system 2 months sooner. Yay, David. Or whatever it might be. Lisa, where are you? Oh, there you are, Lisa. What Lisa did was, I remember our major system went down. We had a production down about 3 months ago, and everybody was trying to figure out what to do. Lisa's the one who found the solution to it. Yay, Lisa. Just things like that, a recognition, visibility, building their reputation within the organization. And if you do that, what are you doing? You're priming the pump for the next time you're trying to motivate them. They'll know you like to do these things and you've made them feel really good about themselves. And sort of like Pavlov's dog, they're going to want a little bit more of it. The next one is relationship. Sometimes people just want to be heard. They want acceptance of things. They want just personal support. So providing someone this when they need it, within certainly, professional workplace parameters. It can really be of great value to them and build their loyalty, thus their motivation in you. And lastly, gratitude, just saying thank you. Then having ownership, there's a for ownership, that second bullet point, number five, a quote that I love, or I think it's just an old idiom at this point, but it's people who aren't part of the solution become part of the problem. So someone is pushing back, an employee says, well, I don't know if I want to do that, I don't like this, whatever it is, ask them for their opinion. Well, no, we shouldn't do that. How should we do it? They say, well, I think you should do this, that, and that. And let's say you agree with them and say, wow, you know what? I wish I asked you that up front. But yeah, can we do it this way instead? They're going to be super motivated. Why? Because now they have ownership in it. And if they have ownership drives involvement and motivation. But now let's put a couple of these together, gratitude and recognition. So you ever get an email from somebody, you did something good to help one of your internal clients or whoever. They sent you an email and they said, hey, Brittany, thank you so much. Great job on that. Really appreciate it. And then Brittany looks a little closer at the email and Brittany's boss was copied on it. You ever have that? Someone sends you an email of how great you are and copies your boss. You look at it and it's like, score. That's a really good one. So what can you do to give visibility to them? When they work for you, is first of all, write them the thank you. That's under five, gratitude, but copy your boss on it. And then they'll look at it and they'll go, wow, that came from my manager. But now, my manager's manager, Laura, is now knows about it because, particularly working in a hybrid or virtual environment, certainly you should have the connection between you and those and your manager. You to your manager is really important. But what's really, really hard when you're outside the office is the visibility to your manager's manager. So in other words, so as a result of that, if you as the manager copy your manager on some stuff related to your person, the person on your team, that dramatically enhances. In this case, it's a twofer. They got a thank you, which is gratitude number five, and they got increased visibility, which falls under number three. Next is motivation in a, the virtual hybrid stuff. Now you might say, well, Eric, why did you talk about all this other stuff now just getting to virtual hybrid? The reason is leading hybrid and virtual teams, it's like regular leadership best practices on steroids. Everything we've talked about is 100% applicable to a virtual world. It's just good management and good leadership. But the concepts are the same, but you must be more strategic, tactical, and deliberate in their execution in order to make them work. So, continuing on this idea now of hybrid, first thing, you got to build trust. But now, what's that trust between? It's between, the member, between two of the members of your team. In other words, that which also, if you have trust between members of your team, what does that also build? It makes them feel part of the team. It helps them feel involved, maybe a best friend of teams in the team. All this other stuff we were talking about, location to location. Is that I worked at a company once where the Boston team and the New York team hated each other. Why? Because it was a bet over a Red Sox Yankees game that, let me say, went awry, and the two teams had a big argument over it, and then for years they just wouldn't talk to each other. It was ridiculous from a business perspective. But anyway, what's the trust from location to location? And also from manager to employee, and then also certainly that means from employee to manager. You trust them, they trust you. Next is effective communication builds trust. Between the members, celebrating success. Let's say Vicky does a great job on something. You can say, hey, Vicky, great job. Glad you did it. But then what do you do? Is it Friday staff meeting? You call Domino's Pizza or wherever people live, and you have a pizza delivered to everybody's house. And you say, hey, this goes to the great work Vicky did. That's team success. And then you know what? When Mark does a great job on another thing or hits some big successful goal 3 months from now, give everybody the pizza and give Mark credit for it. What does that do? Builds camaraderie, makes everybody want to help everybody else, because hey, who doesn't like a free pizza? Next one, define the key communication contacts in different disciplines. Whoops, finger hit the thing too quick. So what that means is that if you're going to be connecting up people with your team to work on it, wherever they are, with di different disciplines, with IT, the different silos, and so on, connect the people in your team to those people and build trust. So that, it's one thing to say, well, I'm in customer service, I trust the other customer service people. It's something else entirely to say, well, I'm in customer service or help desk for that matter, and say, but I really trust the people in DevOps and Datacom and security and these other areas, that if I ask them to help me help somebody, that they're going to do it. It's that, I hope they do what I asked them. That can really be stressful and can actually, quite frankly, not only hurt motivation, but also productivity. Now, for people who are living, or let me say, working 100% virtual, a lot of their motivation, quite frankly, is based on who they are. I'm going to move myself out of this picture for a minute just because it's so absolutely cute. Isn't that one real? There we go. Isn't that one really cute? One really cute doggy. Let me get out of that for a minute. Anyway, is personal motivation. Just not being motivated. If a person is not being motivated, if they're not internally motivated, unless you're sitting on them, well, quite frankly, they're just not going to get things done. If someone is too motivated, you say, oh, we want to hire super motivated people. What's that old line when you're applying for a job? When they say, tell me your strengths and weaknesses. What's your biggest weakness? My biggest weakness is, the end of the workday, I just can't really turn it off. I'm always thinking about work-related stuff at night. I know I should do that a little bit, but I think I do it too much. That's the typical reply when asked about your weakness in a job interview. All right. But the thing is, too much of that in a hybrid environment. I was talking to a friend and I said to him, I said, how do you like working from home? And he said to me, I don't feel like I'm working at home. I feel like I'm living at work. So, but what that can cause if it's too much that in is work-life balance issues, family issues, professional burnout, none of which are good for your firm or good, obviously, most important for the individual. So continued success requires finding that right balance, that right motivational level of work-life balance, being motivated for work, and a lot of the other things that we've talked about, including, tying work to their personal schedules and so on. Next, and just a couple more, is be a communication gateway. What I mean by that is you want to be communicating with people in all directions. Call to one, you're talking to one person on your team and saying, oh, you know what, gee, it would be really good if Elaine knew this too. Yeah, next time I talk to Elaine, I'll think to mention it to her. No, because try to mimic a hallway conversation. So let me see. I'm talking to Kevin, and on some topic, and I see Elaine walking down the hallway. What am I going to do? I'm going to say, "Hey, Elaine, yeah, you got a sec? Yeah, Kevin and I are talking about this. It's good you walked by. I was going to catch you later. Come on over." We obviously can't do that in a virtual environment. So what do? You as the manager say, "Hey, you know what? I'm going to text the Zoom link or whatever, the Zoom link, the phone number, the Teams link, whatever it is, to Brittany to see if she's around. Maybe she can connect in and say, "Hey, Brittany, Kevi and I are talking about this. If you can come on, great. If you're in a meeting or whatnot, don't worry about it. But we're thinking about you." And it'd be, wow, they were thinking about me, and maybe they can get them in. This whole set of things is mimicking that hallway conversation by conferencing people in, by just FYIing them after it gets over. You ever get an FYI message, that just from someone you work with that says, "Hey, two of us were talking about this. We just want to make sure you weren't on the loop on it, knew what was going on." On the one hand, that information might be very important to you, but on the other hand, it just feels good to know you were thought of. Next is schedule one-on-one meetings with your staff, particularly if you're the kind of person who's a little introverted. The reason being is you'll want to talk to people, but you just sort of forget. And a week turns to 2 weeks, turns to a month, turns to a couple of months, and you haven't talked to a particular member of your team. So having one-on-one schedule on your in your schedule, not only does it find a time for you to both do it, but it's a mental reminder that, gee, I haven't talked to this person in a week. Let's do it now. Next is using communication to maximize just team dynamics and camaraderie within the team. Facilitate in-house meetings when you're working with joint projects. Once in a while, maybe once a month, have like a coffee meetings. I know one company, they do it, one manager specifically, I should say, every other Friday. What they do is from 3 to 4, they have what they call a no-work meeting. And the only rule for that meeting is from 3 to 4, the two rules. One, you have to be there, 3 to 4. The other one is you can't talk about work. And what they do is it's what's going on. Oh, my daughter got married. This happened. We just moved. We redid our kitchen. Whatever. The golf team I'm on just won a trophy. Whatever it might be. But it's to humanize people, to get them to know each other. And then they said that was from 3 to 4. And then guess what they did at 4 o'clock? They loved when this happened every other Friday, because instead of having to hang out and be responsible to be there till 5, at 4 o'clock, everybody could go home and sort of take a shorter day that week. Next is find time to talk just casually during different meetings. During your staff meeting, just have something fun. Put on Truth and a Lie, or some other icebreaker you like. Where that one is you just say two things about yourself, one thing that's true and one's not. I used to be a helicopter pilot, and I used to do something else that's really impressive. And then they have to guess which one is true with you. And a staff who knows each other from the workplace but doesn't really know each other too well personally, that's awesome. I've done this in the past, and it's really fun what you learn about people. And then one person put these two extraordinary things, and oh my God, which one of these? And then they said, no, actually, they've done them both. And said, wait a minute, the game's Truth and a Lie. And she said, I know, but I don't like to lie, so I just said two true things. The person came on after it and said, another two extraordinary things. And they said, oh my God, which one of those is real with you? And they said, nah, they're both made up. But you know what is, Sue made two true things, so I figured I'd do two false things just to balance out the room. Everybody got a good laugh out of it. So it's just sort of trying to bring fun things in. But also another good one is schedule office hours. A lot of times in virtual, you feel bad contacting your manager, like, oh, I bet they're in meetings, and like, hey boss, you got 5 minutes. I always hated those emails. So, but what you can do is put on your schedule as the boss, maybe twice a week, maybe a Tuesday afternoon and a Thursday afternoon or something, and just call it office hours. And sort of like in college, where the professor promises to be in the office for those 2 hours. But then what you can do is just, turn off your video and audio, but leave a Zoom session open. And then anybody comes in can say, hey, David, you can go, oh yeah, oh yeah, here I am. What's up? So, you're not being sort of watched. But the thing is, they know that if any time during the day or during the week they want to contact you about something, that you're there waiting for information, waiting for their questions, their comments, their information, whatever it is. It's just a nice way, and it also, quite frankly, stops you from getting all these little emails. You're sort of consolidating it into these 2 hours, and people will appreciate that you're doing it. Next is when you're delegating tasks, because remember, virtually you're delegating a task to someone. You delegate it, Get off the phone with them, get off the Zoom meeting with them, whatever it is, and then they go do it without you. So as a result, when you delegate, if you're going to keep them motivated, you have to maximize the process behind what you're asking them to do. Also, if you're a little control oriented, that makes you feel really good because you know they're following your process. Next is divide the task into measurable sort of bite-sized pieces. Why? So it gives you a reason to continually communicate with them. All right, great. Hey, this is going to take a day or so. It's Monday. You know what? Why don't we schedule maybe just 15 minutes on Wednesday? You have any questions on it? We can talk about next steps or whatnot. Okay, that would be great. Instead of having the, well, just checking in on you, how's it going? You know, one feels like oversight, the other feels like teamwork by putting them in these bite-sized pieces. You know, provide as much background as you can. Instead of telling them 5 minutes about the project, spend 15. Yeah, that's 10 extra minutes you're going to spend communicating to your team about this. But then what happens virtually? They get off. Remember we talked under Dan Pink, the ability to have autonomy. Well, the more they know about the task to be performed, because they're going to have to make lots of micro decisions based on how they think that you would make the decision based on their understanding of what you want to do. So if you spend that extra time, that extra 10 minutes, I won't say spend that extra 10 minutes, I'll say invest that extra 10 minutes, then what that does, it lets them be more autonomous, which raises their motivation. And the decisions that they make on your behalf are probably better decisions on how you would have liked to have it made. The next is to provide specific outcomes and quality requirements. So they'll know how much of it to do, how good to make it, you know, that kind of stuff, what you're expecting. Quite frankly, that's sort of the critical success factors related to it. And then lastly here, to create effective and ongoing communication. Don't just call them haphazardly. If you set up the expectation of, hey, let's talk on this Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Well, why so much? Yeah, I just want to check in. You might have some questions for me. Quite frankly, I need to know where you are on it anyway because I got to put it in my status report and report it back to my boss. So don't make it all about them, you know, that you want to check on them to make sure it's done, which certainly you want to do. But again, give them more autonomy. Explain why you need it. Make it a little bit sort of self-deprecated toward yourself. Hey, I need to know where you stand on this because if my boss asks me and I don't know, I'm going to look sort of silly. So from here is that, as I mentioned, we do these webinars on a monthly basis. Our next one is for anyone waiting to or trying to move into management. We do this one actually every couple of months, but it's called Making the IT Management Move. That'll be on September 27th. And I'm super excited to say is we've started our speaker series. We did one the other day on implementing AI, Microsoft AI. So these are things sort of beyond IT leadership, the things that we do and we teach and so on. And we bring in true industry experts on this. This person here, our speaker, David, he was the CIO for the state of Wisconsin and now specializing in cybersecurity. So this is a great one to sign up for. These are on Mondays. The speaker series are on Mondays. The webinars are on Fridays. But anyway, sign up. It's fabulous. We have a couple of other speakers, and sometime in the next 2 or 3 weeks, you'll be getting an email on it, I would say, on our webinars and speaker series topics for the first half of 2025. Also, we're doing research on an ongoing basis on how to identify and accelerate the growth of high performance leaders. If you go to our website and click on research, take about 5 minutes to do it, maybe a couple more minutes if you want to be a little more thoughtful on it. And some of you, I know you know what I'm going to show next because some people have these. I can recognize some of the names. But we're the governing body for two certifications in IT management. The first one is the ITMLP or IT Management and Leadership Profession. This is geared for people of soon to be up to about 5 years of IT management experience. And what we're teaching you is the business of IT. Now, if you're a new IT manager and you said, well, I just took the 3-day, you know, generic, new manager training class offered by your firm, those are great. I strongly suggest you do those. Human resources and training departments internally do awesome jobs on those. But they, when I say generic, what I mean is they're designed for all professions. What this one does is an addition to it, not a replacement of, teaches you the business of IT. Things like overview of different methodologies, IT trends, manager's perspective on cybersecurity, and the other things you see here. Now, for those more seasoned IT managers or those in IT director roles, is that there's the IT manager and leadership executive. Whereas the MLP, we do monthly, we do this quarterly. The next one for this will be, and the last one for this year is in November. What this is, as you can see, these are more senior level topics. IT is an agent of change, strategic thinking and planning, IT governance, IT and data governance, et cetera. With these is that there's a 3-day exam. We are again the certification body for this certifying body. If upon passing the exam from this is that we send you, among other things, a digital badge that can be added into your social media and other things to help your professional marketability. We've also have a new program coming out. This be will be beginning on October 25th. And what this is this is a 12-week certificate in IT management studies. We meet basically 1 hour a week for 12 weeks, but then in addition to that, those weekly meetings that we have are group coaching sessions. But between them, we provide you instructional videos, quizzes that then provide feedback for you, on if you got it right, if you got it wrong, it tells you why, and so on, supplemental reading, and a whole bunch of other stuff. The topics we'll be doing, and we do one of these topics per week. They're related to team building, budgeting, leadership, management, communication, technology, career growth, and so on. So this is a great program. What we've purposely done with it is just for people's timing perspective. They're busy during the week. This video is on demand. You can watch it anytime you want. And then for the group coaching sessions, they are 1 hour a week. They're going to be on Friday mornings at 9. If you miss one, that's okay. Save up your questions. Come to the next one. But anyway, this is open. We'd love for you to join us for this program. We're super excited over it. If you have any questions on it, you can contact me directly. Look on our website or whatnot. So from here, as I'm running out of time and, well, running out of slides, what I'd like to do is say thank you so much for spending 57 minutes and 27 seconds with us. I truly appreciate it. And I'd like to just say thank you for all for being with us. And if you have any questions, I'm glad to stay on for a few minutes to answer.